Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. So, we all know about Stonehenge in England, and maybe you've heard about other similar prehistoric sites scattered around the British Isles, and their origins and purpose are guessed at by experts, but are really still unknown. It's also a mystery how most of them were constructed, since often they're made of stone materials that seem to have come from dozens or even hundreds of miles away. But I had never heard of this type of megalith existing in France. Not long ago, though, while cleaning out a bookshelf, I ran across an article in a 2009 issue of France magazine about them and discovered that there are a great many of these things in France. Featured in the article was an Englishman who lived in Brittany, which is a province on the west coast of France, and who had been finding and studying these objects for over 20 years. So it turns out he still lives there and he still is following these objects around nearly 15 years later, and today is probably the world expert on them. He's written books and produced films on the subject. His name is Howard Crowhurst. I tracked him down, and he's my guest today, joining us from France. Welcome, Howard.
Yes, hello. Pleased to be here.
Very nice to have you on. Well, let's start with the obvious question. So what are these objects that are there, these megaliths? What are they?
Well, megalith means big stone, basically. That's the origin of the word. And they're constructions made from massive stones. So they first appeared. Well, things have changed recently because a site has been found in southeast Turkey called Göbekli Tepe, which has megaliths there. And it's dated to 11,600 years ago. So the oldest megaliths to be found date from that period, so 9,600 BC approximately. That was an astounding discovery. Nobody thought that would exist. Up until then, Karnak in Brittany was the oldest site for these megaliths, and the megalith building here started around 5,000 BC, so 7,000 years ago. And there are different kinds of megaliths. They can be vertical, standing stones. These standing stones can be on their own, solitary, or aligned in alignments, or in circles, or in rectangles. There are different geometrical shapes that are formed by these standing stones. And they can also be used to make constructions called dolmens, which are, you have the vertical stones, and on those vertical stones, a massive cover stone is placed, making a chamber. And there is often a corridor that leads into that chamber made up of vertical stones. And sometimes these dolmens are covered over with what's called a cairn, which is a big pile of small stones which cover it over, dry stones. And that is why Göbekli Tepe in southeast Turkey was only discovered from the year 2000, because it had been totally covered over by stones. And so nobody knew it was there. It looked like a natural hilltop. And there were some strange sort of stones coming to light there. And they started digging in there and they discovered these incredible megaliths up to 5 meters 50. Is that okay in meters? Do you get the...
Sure. Multiply yeah. by three. Yeah,
okay. 5 meters 50 tall and T-shaped. Very strange ones. So they were totally covered over by this massive artificial hill of dry stones, which was 300 meters in diameter and 15 meters high. An enormous construction which had hidden all these megaliths from view. And there's another kind of construction called a tumulus, which is, it can have a chamber in it or sometimes doesn't have a chamber in it, but it has no access. In general, it has no outer access. If there's a chamber, it is entirely closed off from the outside. And then earth is used, it's dry stone, but also there can be layers of earth, and it turns into a kind of like a natural hill. So a lot of these things were not known about, you know, until fairly recently.
So there are two kinds then, I gather. There are dolmens, which are these constructions that basically are like a table with vertical supports and then a flat stone across the top,
yeah,
mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other type that are individual stones, which I think are called menhirs. Is that right?
Yeah, standing stones or menhirs, yeah.
Yeah, M-E-N-H-I-R. And
yeah.
So do we know the purposes for which they're constructed? I mean, maybe they're different purposes, you know, depending on what they are.
Yeah. Now you say we, it depends who we are.
Okay, right. Fair enough. Do you have an idea?
well, yes. My idea isn't necessarily mainstream because I'm not an archaeologist to start out with. I did mathematics at university. And from digging, from archaeological digging, not a lot can be found, really. Here in Karnak, for example, where there are thousands of these standing stones, approximately 10,000 standing stones still standing in Brittany, here in Karnak, around Karnak, and about 90% have disappeared. It's estimated that there were at least 70,000 standing stones in Brittany about 300 years ago, but many were destroyed after the French Revolution. So seeing as we don't build alignments of standing stones now, it's not part of our daily activity, it's difficult to understand why people should do this. And in fact, there is no official explanation as to why it was done. If you go to visit the Karnak alignments, which for the time being are not a World Heritage Site, they should be, but they're not. But they should be in 2025. I think it's going to become a World Heritage Site. So they're putting lots of amenities in for the tourists. But if you go to visit them, you won't get any explanation about why they're there. You may get some sort of vague suggestions that it has religious function or that it may have been processional lines. But if you take the Karnak alignments, there are 4 kilometers of stones placed in lines. They start off, there are 11 lines of stones, about 100 meters between the first line and the last line. Okay, and 11 lines go off across the countryside like that. And the whole thing lasts for about 4 kilometers, over 3,000 stones altogether, still standing.
Well, you said you have your own idea about what they were for. I mean, yeah. So what is that?
Well, I'll come up as well with some sort of vague religious explanation, but it's more scientific. I've come to the conclusion over the years that it's a massive sacred space. Why would it be sacred? It's because it's linked to calendar, to solstice and different orientations, and also geometry. I've developed a science called astrogeometry, which is not well known, but which shows how at certain places on Earth, the sun actually, at its extreme positions at solstice, will give a certain geometry. Its position with respect to cardinal directions, north, south, east, west, creates a certain geometrical form. And that the ancients seem to have realized that, and those places became very important. So this is totally unknown. This I've written a lot of books about it, and I explain all about it. But it's not mainstream at all for the time being. I have quite a lot of trouble getting this information across. But what's astounding is that I can actually prove it. You know, it's not a hypothesis. So if we look at the Karnak alignments, the special place, Karnak is a special place which was chosen because at winter solstice and summer solstice, when the sun rises, it creates an angle with respect to east-west, which is the angle of a 3-4-5 triangle. Now, the 3-4-5 triangle was a major shape in Egypt. The pyramid of Khafre, for example, is a 3-4-5 triangle base. That's the shape of the pyramid. And Herodotus says that the Egyptians considered the 3-4-5 triangle to be the most perfect form, that it was similar to the nature of the universe. And here in Karnak, the sun rises at solstice on that angle from east-west. And that angle is actually marked out then by a long line of standing stones.
All right, so apart from the still mysterious purpose, but with that's a good hypothesis, and you're a mathematician, and so you're maybe well qualified to to propose that. But apart from that idea of why they were made, how were they made? I mean, some seem almost impossible given their giant size and location and distance from any source of that kind of stone, as I said in the introduction. So just kind of briefly, any idea about how they were made?
Well, yes, there are lots of different theories. This hasn't been the main subject of my study, because my main question has been why? Why did they do it? But as far as how it was done, it is, in fact, really a mystery. You can see quite a lot of drawings of people with ropes pulling the stones on wooden rollers. But in fact, those drawings, it's easy to do drawings, of course, but these drawings don't fit the reality here. The largest standing stone in the area is called the Grand Menhir Brisé, the big broken menhir. And it weighs 350 tons, metric tons. It's 20.4 meters long, and it's made from a stone, orthogneiss, which is not local. So this block of 350 tons was transported over at least 12 kilometers as the crow flies. Of course, no one's suggesting that crows carried these. So they had to go up and down hills. There is at least, wherever this stone came from, there is at least one valley to cross, because orthogneiss forms underground, deep underground. And so it only comes up to the surface if there's been some kind of upheaval of some kind. And so the spots where you can actually get the orthogneiss are very localized. It's not all over the place. And so wherever the quarry may be, the closest is at least 12 kilometers away, and at least one valley has to be crossed. Now, nobody can explain how on earth people could have transported a 350-ton block of stone over those distances. It would even be difficult to do now. But of course, at the time, we have absolutely no idea how that could have been done. It's quite astounding. Another astounding thing is that, of course, it's been suggested that it was dragged by oxen or animals of some kind, but that's not possible because you can't coordinate them specifically enough to drag massive weights like that. Humans who pull can coordinate exactly to pull at the same time, whereas oxen can't. And so, well, two oxen can, but not hundreds. And so if it was dragged on rollers, then it was dragged by humans. And it's been estimated, because it's on the top of a hill, so it's been estimated just to get it to the top of the hill, up the slope to the hilltop where it is, it would have taken 3,000 men 3 months. Now, as the population density at that time is positioned at 0.8 people per square kilometer, that we're talking about 3,000 men who have to be fed, of course, and who have families, and there are older people who don't take part. So basically, we're talking about the entire population over at least 10,000 square kilometers, which is the whole of Brittany. So in other words, just to drag this stone up the slope would have taken the entire population of Brittany for 3 months.
Does seem a little unlikely. Yeah.
Well, so. These are different facts which are not put together You see, they're different facts, which anybody can check up on as far as the density population is determined by the amount of things we to be found. So unless there was a very large population which cleaned up its picnic.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's
and smoothed over the drag marks of getting it there, which would be deep in the ground, I would think. Anyway.
Well, whatever. It could be done on rollers, of course. They say on rollers, but rollers work up to about 30 tons. But above 30 tons, it starts getting very difficult. But the other thing is that there weren't any trees in the area at that time. You had to go to about 30 kilometers inland to find the first woods. So it's all rather strange. And there's an even stranger thing is that, well, I don't know if it's even stranger, but on the island of Belle Isle, which is out into the sea and which has always been an island, you have to go, there's deep water that you have to go across to get to this island. There is a block of orthognice, which is found there, 25-ton block of orthognice, and there is no orthognice on the island. So somehow a 25-ton block was got across to this island, which is, it's quite some distance, I'd say at least 10 kilometers from the shore, you know, from the mainland. There are these strange questions. So how was it done? I mean, for the smaller stones, it's, you know, it's easy to imagine. But for the larger stones, it's very difficult.
Well, I, semi-tongue in cheek, I vote for extraterrestrial transportation here.
Anyway. Well... of course, with this kind of situation, that's what a lot of people do. You know, they say, well, if we can't explain how humans did it, somebody else must have done it. I don't go into that. I've never gone into that idea in any of my books or anything, because what I'm interested in is what is here. You know, what can be found? What can we actually really talk about with certainty? Because there can be all kinds of theories. But what I've discovered is that, in fact, there is very high-level geometry, which is far in advance. The stones are positioned according to measurements and geometry, which is far in advance of anything which we would imagine prehistoric people being capable of. And that's one of the reasons my work has difficulty getting across, is because it kind of, you'd have to rewrite all the history books, basically. It kind of puts into question the idea of the link between knowledge and writing. You see, we have no written prehistory, means before writing. We have no written knowledge of this time. And so we imagine that because there's no writing, people couldn't think. We don't.
Yeah, okay.
We never really say that. Yeah. But we kind of suggest, we sort of take it as a given thing that thinking began with writing. And why should that be true? You know, writing is a linear way of expressing ideas, but there could definitely be other ways. And people were definitely capable of thinking. Genetically, they were. If you look at the DNA genetically, 20,000 years ago, people were exactly the same as us. So,
you know, along that subject, I mean, there were at the time, you know, we call them Stone Age tribes because those were that was the material they made their tools out of for the most part. But there were different tribes in Europe. There were the Gauls in France, and I guess the Teutons in Germany, and many, many others that cross pollinated and moved around. But is there an idea that these were made by different tribes in different places? I mean, in other words, did they develop, do you think, independently, or do they all derive from some common tradition? And I realize that would just be speculation, but just...
Well, these tribes are known much more recent. The megalithic builders are, up to present, totally dissociated from all historical tribes or peoples that are to be known. The Celtic people arrived here about 1000 BC. And so when they arrived, they discovered all the megalithic sites already constructed. And they used them I mean, they set up around them, and their tradition took them into consideration, but they didn't build them. It's like the difference between using a computer and building one, you know? So the origin, basically, this is what I was saying at the beginning, what was officially accepted until the year 2000 was that Karnak was the kind of central beginning of things. All the oldest dating comes from the Karnak area. And although the megaliths are to be found all over Europe, all over the world, in fact, Karnak had always been seen to be the kind of origin of it. But this has now changed for different reasons. One of the reasons, as I said, was Göbekli Tepe, where the site was totally covered over. And so the carbon dating, which took place inside the site, has not been, it must be true, you see, because you can't date the stones themselves. So any carbon dating done around the stones is always associative. If you find charcoal beneath a menhir, then you can suppose that the charcoal was put there before the menhir. And so you can say, well, then this menhir was put there at such and such a date. But the menhir itself, you never know if it had fallen over and it was put back up at that time, you know. And so Göbekli Tepe was really the first case, because it was totally covered over. It was a perfect case for getting very precise and undisturbed radiocarbon dating. So the results at 9,600 BC were just mind-boggling. Many archaeologists just didn't know what to do with that information. I still don't, really. And what's happening now is that the Turkish archaeologists have started doing a lot of excavations in the area around Göbekli Tepe, and they have now found about 16 similar sites, one which was excavated last year called Karahan Tepe, which is an unbelievable thing. It's a kind of big pit, a big circular pit. And in this big circular, it was all covered in, so they've dug it all out. And in this big circular pit, there are, I wouldn't like to say exactly, around 15 standing stones. But only one of them is in fact a standing stone. The others have been dug out of the rock. So you have these, like, say, 15 stones, like standing stones, like menhirs there. One of them has been carried and put there, and all the others have just been dug straight out of the bedrock, which is just incredible. And nobody really knows what to do with that as a piece of information. So things are evolving very rapidly on this subject.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Howard Crowhurst in France, about a phenomenon there, megaliths, which are, you know, large stones, ranging from large to humongously large. and they are ancient structures put there on the ground in different configurations and different shapes and types thousands of years ago. I mean, up to 11,000 years ago, he was just describing in Turkey, actually. But we're talking here mainly about the ones in France. And Howard, we are kind of getting toward the end of the show, but I've read that you can still find unknown or at least undocumented megaliths in France just by walking around across much of France. Is that still true today?
Well, just by walking around, it is possible, yes, to still find megalithic sites, but probably less so than it used to be. But yes, it is possible, especially, for example, the tumuluses, things that look like natural hills can be discovered suddenly to be actual artificial constructions. And so that kind of monument, you know, there are, who knows how many of those are to be found. But a lot of the stones were destroyed voluntarily. firstly because of religious belief. They were thought to be sort of evil or pagan remnants of some kind of magical past. And around the year 1000, there was quite a lot of fanatic Catholic destruction of the alignments. But they dug these holes and pushed them over into the holes. So they're still there. And so some of them have been re-erected in the center of Brittany over the past 30 years. A team of people have been patiently re-erecting a series of alignments which was pushed over around the year 1000. So it is possible, yes, to find the remnants of this megalithic tradition underground. Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of other things I'd like to ask you about this. It's a fascinating topic, and I'm sure our listeners are interested in it too, but we are getting to the end of the show. So let me just kind of ask you one last personal question, Howard. What's the most surprising or startling thing you've found? And I'm sure there are many of them, but pick one out of a hat. In your years of studying this phenomenon, is there something that just really blew you away?
Yeah. Like you say, quite a lot of things over the years blew me away. One thing which was particularly important for me was when I discovered, I was looking at the geometry of a 3-4-5 triangle. I found two stones which were marking two points which seemed to be linked to this geometry. And so I went to what looked to be the corner of this geometrical shape, and there was a lot of bracken and bushes and stuff growing. It was so I came along with a friend and we cleaned it all out, and there exactly at the spot that I'd been expecting was a perfectly square stone planted in the ground, quite a big one, you know, at least a meter on each side, a square stone. And it was exactly orientated as the right angle of this 3-4-5 triangle that I'd been discovering. So that was and it was positioned with exact measurements with respect to what I was looking for. So that was a very, very powerful moment, actually discovering a stone exactly where I'd, you know, hoped or thought that maybe it would be.
Mm. Yeah, kind of confirmed some of your speculation then.
Mm, yeah.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Howard, but
All right.
You can find more of Howard and his research on Facebook at howard.crowhurst, and that's C-R-O-W-H-U-R-S-T, and a lot more on YouTube just by searching his name. There are videos there, and you know, look around on Amazon at the books that Howard's written on this subject. So it's very interesting, and I just want to thank you for being on with us from France today, Howard.
Mm-hmm. Very pleased to be with you, yeah.
And thanks to all of you out there for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.